Welcome back, Interweb friends, to Stop the Movie I Want to Get Out. Hollywood makes bad movies. We make fun of them. This week, we are looking at Maximum Overdrive, the movie that writer-director Stephen King says he barely remembers making because he was coked out of his mind. And when you watch the film, that seems like a pretty good description of what was going on.
My other favorite quote was when he was asked why he hasn't made another movie since Maximum Overdrive, he said, just watch Maximum Overdrive.
I think that this film serves as an excellent anti-drug PSA.
It really does.
This is what drugs do to you, kids. Yeah. Don't do drugs. Watch Maximum Overdrive.
So before we get into it, I'm Alex Dunbar, as always, here with Brian Mueller.
Who's on his phone.
Who's silently looking at a phone.
I'm researching.
Okay.
I'm going to set this one out, guys. Yeah. You take it from here.
Andy Wolf.
I'm coked out of my mind.
Cody Wolf.
You.
And Jack Estabrook.
Hi.
Let's jump right into this movie. It is famous for being the film written and directed by Stephen King. I think this is an 86 movie. Yeah. Okay.
It was based off a short story he had done, too.
Okay, short story. Is that
I Trucks? Hope it was really short.
It was pretty short.
Yeah.
It's called Trucks.
It must be really short because
I read it. I don't remember it.
Spoiler alert, almost nothing happens in this movie. This movie is so devoid of plot. The TV Guide description, it is the plot. There is nothing else that goes on in this movie.
Except for a lot of fun and...
Oh my God!
Right. Crazy hijinks.
All right, we're together on this one.
Fun and crazy hijinks.
I'm glad we're on the same mic.
Fun is not what I was having.
Okay. Well, let's...
that's the thing with the whole thing. You're saying earlier, it's ridiculous.
I laughed.
Right, it was funny. I don't know if it's supposed to be like a comedy horror thing or.
No.
I thought it was fun, and that's what I think they're going for. That's why it can't be too harsh.
You have a very loose definition of fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Come on, there's some funny stuff here.
Yeah, this movie was about as funny as, like, a child's
funeral.
You didn't
laugh at any part.
No.
The kid getting run over by a steamroller, was it funny?
I laughed at one part, and then I realized I don't think I was supposed to laugh.
The dog killed by the toy car in his mouth, was it funny?
The only things I laughed at were unintentional. There was unintentional comedy I laughed at. This movie's attempts to actually be funny were painful. Were, like, awful. And so poorly, like... paced throughout the film, like the pacing. This film, I'm trying to even compare it to another film we've done on the show, is a pacing nightmare. There is no pacing to this film at all. No rhythm. You never have any sense of like where a scene is going, ending, emotional context, what the threat is. Like anything, it's so bad. Before I totally derail, we'll start. All right, so this movie starts off with...
Wow, that pretty much summed it up.
A bridge decides to go up on itself.
No.
We'll see you next week.
It opens with a shot of the Earth, and then there's a text that goes over it saying that Earth will be...
in the comet's
suspended
tail.
In a comet's tail for
eight
an
days.
Exact precise...
Oh,
it's like,
got
it's
it.
Like 8 days, 7 hours, 22 minutes,
and
38
seconds
or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, the most important plot developments in this film happen in text on the screen at the beginning and end of the film. That's the most important information you receive.
Well, you notice like half of the movies we watch start with like a big shot of the Earth. It seems like to be the step. If you're making a movie and you think it's a good idea to start with a shot of the Earth and then put text over it, don't do it. It's a bad idea.
That's a dumb way. It's like it wants to say, okay, to set the scene, this is the Earth, and
you are
people
here.
Live on it. Yeah. There are bridges that now open on their own.
And we get right to Stephen King's cameo. Get that right out of the way.
Oh yeah, he's like the first
right in the beginning.
Why did
like,
you say that?
Get it out of the way. Yeah, he's the one.
It's right there, first line of the movie.
He's the guy who goes to the
ATM.
For no
reason.
Oh, that was him. Okay.
For no reason, we show a bank.
The opening scene, I laughed at. I will say that that was hilarious.
That's funny.
That was the closest this movie came to being funny.
I thought that was funny. It comes on and starts saying "F you."
Yeah.
I mean. You know, would a machine know English to say F you? I don't know, but
it was mildly entertaining. I don't know
and
why.
And then he gets money out of the ATM and it says, you are an asshole. Yeah. That was awesome.
So then,
all right, I'll give it to you. That was
all right, good. There's one.
It was. So then, that was a good one. Right,
so
an
other
asshole.
Machines.
And that was Stephen King's
here's your $40.
Cameo.
Well, let's just say, too, I want to mention that Stephen King is a huge AC/DC fan. So, of course, his one movie he made, he had AC/DC do the entire soundtrack.
Which is brilliant.
The entire soundtrack.
Which is brilliant.
So, which is one reason why I love this movie. It's
brilliant.
Yeah, because I love how it accompanied the gas pumping sequence.
That's why it's funny. It doesn't work.
It does not work.
They wrote the song called Who Made Who for the movie, and that is what plays over this first scene that we're about to get into.
The opening credits sequence.
Well, let's just move ahead to like this like really long scene of this bridge, this drawbridge opening on its own.
It's so long, it's longer than the actual song, which is like 3 minutes long.
I felt like they were looping the song.
Yeah.
It takes forever for this bridge to open. And there, like, there's a truck of watermelons. Can we talk about the truck?
The watermelons were the most treacherous thing on that bridge.
There are watermelons.
And then there's some, yeah, there's falling. Some guy, like, in the bridge
there's
control.
A number,
like, oh, no, what's going on?
There are a number of things that were really off about the scene. One, as the bridge starts to move up, everyone, like, realizes right away, like, oh, my gosh, the bridge is moving
up.
But no one seems to do anything about it.
Yes. But the two guys inside don't even know the bridge is going up.
Yeah, exactly. They just sit there and watch this all happen. And then, no!
One guy's literally picking his nose.
All the people on the bridge for, like, 2 minutes, like, 2 minutes in movie time, are like, oh, the bridge is going up. By the way, still, cars are coming flying into them at 70 miles an hour.
Yeah,
like, cars
all right.
There is one car. There is a truck actually straddling the bridge. So it wasn't on the bridge when it was originally... Exactly. Yeah. So in the wide shot, like, it's going up on its own. Then all of a sudden, there's, like, this truck. At least it seemed that way.
But the guy straddled the bridge. He doesn't get out of his truck. He goes to get out.
Yeah.
Sees his trail and jumps back in and tries to move his truck.
The wheels are suspended.
That's not going to
throughout this whole 10-minute sequence, random watermelons are hitting things.
There's a watermelon truck, and the watermelons are literally in every scene they cut to. Like, there's one guy trying to get out of his car, and he, like, steps in a watermelon and trips. Then a melon, like, hits someone in the head as it falls down.
After, like, 5 minutes, I'm like, come on. All the watermelons are out of the truck by now.
Why couldn't there have been kiwis in that truck? There's a van, too.
There's a big AC/DC logo on it.
And then there's a lady who literally
flies out through a windshield.
Yeah, just
because they tilted the car. She's like, she goes right through this windshield and then hits another truck.
There's a woman that literally gets ejected out of a car from a standstill.
Now,
if you're on the bridge and you've crossed the apex of the bridge and you're going back down, why wouldn't you keep driving? You're past the bridge.
So you
why
would the car just go down the hill?
Going down on the bridge when they could have. I mean, I can understand going up because you can't get past the barrier at that point. But why wouldn't you just keep driving when you're going down?
Because Stephen King was coked out of his mind. That's why.
That's the answer to every question.
You're either going to get ejected out of your car or get hit by a watermelon. Just keep driving.
Just keep driving.
Oh my lord!
It was a very long sequence to establish machines are taking over. I guess.
My God!
It could have been done a little quicker.
That bridge could not have been going up any slower.
I can understand where he's going.
10 minutes of non-characters, non-dialogue. There's been essentially two lines of dialogue in the first 15 minutes of the movie. More of machines taking over and machines fighting back. It's endless. Endless shots of it. Like, if anybody didn't
understand.
That's what
it's about.
Yeah, that's the movie.
But there's no characters.
Basically, because of the Comet's tail, I guess, the machines are coming to life. And that's the bridge is the first sign of this.
I guess.
The bridge goes up on its own. Oh, no, what's going on? Then, like in The Stand, we're all of a sudden shown, it's also happening here. It's also happening here. It's also happening here. It's also happening here. At every spot, there's characters. And all the characters converge on one spot. And have to figure out a way out.
Most of them are already there.
This is like,
as I was watching this,
I realized, like, this is like a redneck version of Stephen King's The Mist.
Instead
of monsters, it's like the redneck version where it's like, there's no monsters outside, there's trucks outside.
Yes.
Terrible.
Yes.
Terrible.
It's a good analogy.
I spent all day watching zombie movies and, like, The Walking Dead all day long, and then I watched this, so it was like a very weird, like, it was the same thing as, like, a zombie movie,
but much less
trucks outside. Yeah. Just like driving around slowly around the.
But much less scary and good.
Yeah.
We then meet.
How do you go from The Walking Dead to this?
I had to watch it.
Your brain must go into shock or something. It's like going from eating like a great strip steak to like McNuggets. McDonald's doesn't sponsor us, dude.
Or the other way around.
Well, not yet. We're strictly Burger King now.
Okay, good. Love the Whopper.
So we then meet our main character, and I say main character by default because he's.
The hero, we know,
he's the main character because he's the only recognizable actor.
Right, he's a big star at the time, yeah.
And to avoid confusion, he's
only
actually referred to as
person.
Hero by one of the other characters.
Yeah, and another character calls him hero all the time. Yeah. When Emilio Estevez is working as a cook at a diner run by Commissioner Gordon from the Tim Burton Batman movie.
Oh, that's Commissioner.
And the closest thing this movie gets to emotional drama is when Commissioner Gordon is like, "I want you to work an hour of OT, unpaid."
And you complain, like, you go back to jail.
Yeah.
With us all being in the news business, like working an hour of OT and not getting paid is Wednesday.
When I was watching, I'm like, I work 9 hours a day and put in for 8 every day. What are you complaining about?
Yeah.
Some kind of operation you're running here. Yeah, it's called real life. Yeah. That's what happens.
And the some machines. Let's also talk about this. Some machines yes. seem to like take on a mind of their own and want to hurt human beings. Other machines
right.
don't seem they're to cool. care.
I was going to say, some of the, like, the couple that come up later, their car is fine.
Well, none of the cars ever
there was, no, was, go crazy. There was a scene, though, where the bug was in the tree.
But, like, so we'll,
on, yeah. we'll, don't actually see
so let's yeah. talk about machines.
I'm sure
that was a foreign-made car. no American-made car would ever rebel.
I'm sure, like, a toaster drove him off the road or something, forced him into the tree.
Here are machines that the comet somehow made into sentient beings. ATMs. Electric knives, tractor trailers, but apparently the comet wasn't interested in regular cars.
Right, right. What everybody has.
You know, lights, you know, like
the lights were in control.
Oh, maybe the lights were. Okay. Rocket launchers.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Though really, they did have weapons.
The comet really might have wanted to think about taking over rocket launchers.
Yeah, they didn't really think about it. Well, you know, comets, they come by so unpredictably, you don't see them coming until they're right there. You probably didn't have a lot of time to plan.
Well, that's true, because it controls the one gun on the Yeah, but none of the other guns they're holding go crazy.
Some guns, but not the rocket launchers. Yeah.
And why are there rocket launchers and a stockpile of weapons? This is a line of dialogue that I missed.
He's selling guns, yeah.
Yeah,
he's an arms dealer.
Yeah. He's an arms dealer who operates out of a truck stop that also has an arcade in the back.
That makes total sense right there.
Okay. It's a good front.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a very eclectic rest stop.
And I'd also say, like, the way some of the machines operate, I have seen the inside of a Coke machine, like, that gives you cans of Coke.
We were talking about Stephen King being coked out. When he said coked out, do you mean he was drinking lots of soda?
You don't think that machine can get the velocity it needs to kill a Coke?
This is...
which is another funny, I mean...
A soda machine cannot launch things out at, like, bullet velocity. There is nothing in a soda machine.
Things start to go down, and the characters are beginning to converge.
Wait, can we talk about the baseball scene?
Baseball game.
First off, you can't complain about a soda machine when someone gets killed by a pinball machine about 5 minutes earlier.
Oh, yeah. I think that's a young Giancarlo Esposito. I mean, I think so. I think that is.
I gotta go back and watch it.
Yeah, I think it is. And yeah, he was killed by touching a pinball machine.
Yeah.
So again, okay. So
well,
the,
that might
again,
make more sense than a Coke can
to,
of.
And to
yeah,
clarify,
I can see someone getting electrocuted.
What can we say, Pepsi?
All right, Pepsi. Sure. Yeah. Machines. The comet.
Why are you wearing a Pepsi hoodie? Andy's wearing a Pepsi hoodie randomly?
That's his sponsorship. That's corporate sponsorship.
We're loosely sponsored by Pepsi.
By Lucy.
This gut is loosely sponsored.
You have a shirt that says Pepsi underneath it.
Yeah.
Wow.
So the
shameless. This is shameless product choice.
And he's drinking Pepsi next.
Yeah. This really.
We have Pepsi socks.
I didn't realize today I was so Pepsi'd out.
We have really sold out on this show.
You just like go into your closet and it's just. A wardrobe of Pepsi items.
I'm Pepsi'd out.
You have like a suit that has the big Pepsi logo on the back.
You don't want to know where his Pepsi tattoo is.
So let's add that to the list.
This guy is like robbing in this truck stop where Emilio Estevez works, and these trucks are beginning to act all funky. There is this dude in the back because they have an arcade in the back who is trying to. Is he trying to steal the change out of the pinball machines?
He was looking shady, wasn't
then
he?
Then something happens and he touches...
The pinball machines go crazy, like they jerk,
and then all the glass breaks, and then all the change falls out, so he starts gathering all this change
and cigarettes come out.
Cigarettes come out of the cigarette machine, and he gets electrocuted. And it's like Wile E. Coyote-style electrocution. It's just, whoa. Like, he literally lights up like a Christmas tree.
Yeah. Which again, so let's.
Now, I didn't know. Again, maybe I wasn't paying as close attention, but I didn't even get the connection that they were in the same building until later on when Emilio Estevez
opens
up the back door
really
and sees the dead guy lying there. Well, I mean, I'm too busy trying to figure out what the hell is going on to figure out diner.
And that was before the
pinball
coach got
machine.
That was right before. So then they go to the baseball game.
So let's add this to the list. So the comet is interested in making Pepsi machine sentient.
Wow, that was Giancarlo
Esposito.
Electric
knives.
I didn't even catch
that. And pinball machines. Again, not interested in
ATMs,
rocket launchers.
Yeah. Insulting
ATMs. Very interested in making sure that pinball machines now have a mind of their own.
You would really annoy people as if it kept saying tilt every time you played.
Well,
that would drive
again,
me crazy.
Going back to the coach in that whole scene, how many laughs were there?
I thought it was funny.
Right. I started laughing until children started dying.
Oh, look at this great. The steam roller going over again.
And then immediately it goes into like an AC/DC riff. Yeah. Like, man. After the kids just get steamrolled.
Oh my God, I laughed.
The first thing wrong about this scene
is all the kids are wearing like jeans when they're playing baseball. Like, what?
Yeah.
Which just starts the trend of really terrible wardrobe choices in this movie, which we can get into later. But and the coach goes, "Oh, let's all have sodas after the game." Right. So they go to the vending machine. Now, I thought this was a comedic relief scene.
Right.
Because the first can that comes out of the machine hits him in the groin. I'm like, all right, we got a groin shot. That's kind of funny. But then he like drops down and starts getting pelted in the head. And then the kids come over, and the kids start getting hit, and they start dying.
And there's like a big dent. Can we just say this? In the coach's forehead, there is literally like a circular dent.
And meanwhile, the Wolf family is like cackling with delight as these little 10-year-olds are dying from getting...
Like, for some reason, he flips over the handlebars.
One of the boys does like a little crocodile walk like he's in a war zone.
I thought like a sprinkler was going to come off the show. That's why he like fell over his bike on the field. And it was just like, he just fell.
And again, we get this bizarre machines attack music, which as we heard before is just this
whack,
which then cuts off abruptly.
And then we go back to the diner, right?
We do. It becomes a question
the kid starts running back. Let's talk about this
for a second, because we got to talk about this. Stephen King, as we've said, has admitted he was coked out of his mind during the making of this. Emilio Estevez looks high as a kite. Almost. I mean,
yeah, he does.
Bloodshot is not like even.
Well, he's working 9-hour days. I mean, come on. When is he sleeping? Right.
He looks so high in every scene that you see him in. Like, this movie's budget. This was a $10 million budgeted movie.
What?
1986, that's a lot of money.
Jack sounded like AC/DC.
Most of that money, I'd like to
who
say.
Who paid for what?
I think that, I had to do it in the spirit of the soundtrack this movie. I mean, I appreciate the artistic work of AC/DC like every other human being. But at the same time, I thought that maybe that money is going to pay Stan Lee for the gratuitous use of the Green Goblin logo.
Oh yeah, because
one of the tractor trailers has the Green Goblin on its face.
Green Goblin.
There's like a Jack in the Box with the Green Goblin that pops out, and it's like the leader. They imply it's the lead truck.
I'm guessing they didn't license that at all. I'm guessing there was no
that they ripped it off, because that's obviously the Marvel supervillain Green Goblin.
It's obviously the Green Goblin. I'm guessing of the $10 million budget, $8 million went to cocaine.
and the rest to AC/DC.
Yeah. So Emilio Estevez. So
that's basically it. Stan Lee, cocaine, and AC/DC. That's where the money went.
Sounds like money well spent to me.
Can we just say, there's almost no dialogue in this movie. This is like a
hour, 45-minute
movie with like 15 minutes of dialogue.
Yeah.
If that, I'm probably exaggerating in saying there's 15 minutes of dialogue.
Well, there's a lot of Bubba, hey Bubba.
Yeah, he calls everyone Bubba. I was confused at first. Yeah, I thought that Bubba was Emilio Estevez's character's name.
Yeah,
he calls everyone Bubba, like demeaningly.
People just kind of hang out in
and
the truck stop.
And his license plate actually
hanging
says Bubba
out at the Dixie Boy on a Tuesday
with Bubba and Bubba and can't forget Bubba.
They just hang out at this truck stop and ask each other what they're doing. There's no
what at this point.
And the
too,
trucks are
is
of course
this point with electric knife
outside.
Attacks.
Yes.
The electric knife attacks the lady.
Yes.
And, yeah.
It doesn't cause any real damage, but it cuts the skin, makes her bleed.
Yeah.
This should be blood pretty good there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Then later on, I mean, but later on, is there like a bandage on her arm later on?
She's totally fine. Her arm.
Her boss puts her back to work after.
Her arm is
I think it looks worse than it actually ended up being.
It looks like a super soaker. Like, it's one of those Saturday Night Live effects where there's like blood everywhere. And then one of the like other minor characters back is like, "Hey, did you get cut?
That knife bites you, honey."
And she turns and looks at him like all annoyed. It's like,
her like arm is like hanging off.
He just sprayed blood over the
"Hey, those eggs and grits coming out soon."
Oh, this movie. So then like the love interest is introduced. I don't know if anybody noticed this. The first scene with Emilia Estevez and I don't even remember the girl's name who's the love interest.
It's Babette.
It's Babette.
They meet each other, but their dialogue is done as ADR. It's a covered scene.
And it's also as if they know each other. Like they've known each other before. Like she literally walks up and she's like, hey, what's going on? And he's like, oh, you know, it's...
This had to be a studio note of like, can we establish that these characters met? Or like this definitely was just ADR because they're just showing random shots of a truck.
Right, yeah.
These characters are like, hi, I'm Billy. Right,
and then the mirror. And like the rearview mirror is like spying on them to like
you
get away with
meet many
the,
men yeah. at a rest stop.
Yeah.
Now here's a question I want to get right now. I understand that like electronic devices are being affected by the comet's gas. I can accept that. Okay.
Oh, it's the gas?
But the gas of the comet's tail. The thing is, to what extent are mechanical objects affected? Because the trucks drive on their own okay, because as long as the engine's going, there's some kind of electrical charge. But
you're looking way too far.
How does it move the mirror? How do they start on their own?
Oh my God.
And also, why aren't the bicycles alive?
You can't look
let's also talk about this.
They're absolutely mechanical.
Engines, they don't have...
They're not electronic.
Well, they don't run on electricity.
Right, they're mechanical.
Yes, sprinklers, not powered by anything. Sprinklers are powered by the laws of nature, not anything mechanical.
The comet should have no means
to make a sprinkler a sentient object that can turn on and off when it wants to.
Like the ATM I can get, it's computerized. Oh, you know, once the truck is running, okay.
Now, you brought up the sprinkler part. Now, this is one of the funnier parts to me because the kid is going through their neighborhood.
Yes.
And seeing all the death and destruction that the machines...
Yes, piles of dead bodies.
Cords wrapped around people's necks.
The one baseball player that got away from the rogue vending machine.
And the dog, like I said earlier, the dog with a toy car in his mouth.
So this kid, there's two other like B plots that get us out of the truck stop. A kid who's...
Survivor of the Little League soda can
the
massacre.
The survivor of the horrific vending machine massacre.
So that kid and a honeymooning couple who are driving around. So the kid is on his bicycle going through the town. And they do what Andy says. Like, he's driving along, he's seeing dead people. But because the soundtrack is from AC/DC, it goes like this. Like, kid sees dead body. Pause. Bam, 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 bam. You know, kid sees a dead body. Really, just guitar riffs.
It really added to the movie.
Oh, it's so great.
Not great. Not great. We are 30 minutes.
Then he hides from an ice cream truck.
Yeah. But then the bloody lawnmower comes chasing him down the road.
Yeah. We're 30 minutes into this movie at this point. There has been no significant character established except for the kid who seems to be trying to escape from the vending machine.
Who's like the smartest one out of all of them. He like actually understands what's going on.
Nothing essentially has happened in the movie. There has been no progress on anything. And we're 30 minutes in. That's pretty amazing.
The film felt like it was dragging. I mean, it was just dragging. I mean,
I didn't think so.
I actually, believe it or not, I think from a fun bad movie perspective, trucks coming to life and chasing people down is actually an intriguing concept. And here I think, because I was expecting something better than this.
Yeah.
More fun to watch anyway.
If you're interested in the idea...
This wasn't very fun to watch,
if you're interested
in
the idea of trucks chasing people down and having a vendetta, watch Duel. Great movie.
Duel is a phenomenal movie.
While I was watching, I was like, I want to watch Duel again.
Yeah. Duel is a phenomenal movie.
This made
movie.
Me want to watch Duel. Yeah, this is not a fantastic movie. This is an embarrassing movie.
Next moment drive was made by Steven
fired
Spielberg.
Up Alex about this.
This is like The Happening. This is really...
I was thinking it was very happening-esque.
No, very happening-esque.
All we needed is people hanging from the trees, and it would have been complete.
The Happening was supposed to be more serious, where this definitely was made to be more comical.
This would definitely be more
comic booky.
I don't think so. I think that in post-production, they realized how serious some of their problems were,
when you
and
see
they tried
the dog
to spin it that way.
With the thing in his mouth.
Now that I think about it, I can understand that was like a funny little improv. Why don't we have everyone dead by cars and the little dog is killed by a mini car? I can kind of get the macabre humor there, but I kind of missed it because I was just like, why aren't, huh?
But it's
like,
so,
as I was watching
but there's
the movie.
No subtlety to it. Like, there's no, like, Stephen King shows no comedic timing, comedic pacing. Like, it's just like, bam, here's this sight gag. no pacing to this movie at all. And okay, and can we talk about the other couple?
Lisa Simpson,
the voice of Lisa Simpson, and her husband, Lee Smith, are driving her in a car that is not a sentient being. It seems to be going along with.
Yeah, it would seem to be the trucks only.
Yeah,
and one airplane.
And one right, and ice cream trucks.
And an ice cream truck.
And
lawnmowers.
So it's and lawnmowers. In smaller
and,
motors.
And a little just,
and
a
Volkswagen Beetle.
And a little golf cart with a machine gun on it.
Yeah, just not mid-sized sedans.
Right. Yeah. And Caterpillar.
The trucks kept like hitting the cars too. Like they knew they weren't.
Yeah,
like a part of their whatever.
Plan. Yeah.
So they kept. Like running the cars off the road, and
the cars were on strikes. This happened many years ago. They're like, we're not doing this again.
So this married couple realizes that the trucks are trying to get them, so they're trying to outrun one. And there's this weird chase scene, which was like
the homeless man's
version of Duel, like the chase scene with the honeymoon couple on the highway and the truck chasing them. And then for reasons still unexplained, the truck chasing them. Catches on fire and explodes for
yes,
no reason.
Yes, like, yes. It like runs off the road though. Like, don't they like outrun it and it like flips down like the side of an embankment?
But it's already
and then they're
but
like,
as soon as it goes over the embankment, it bursts
exactly.
Out of flames.
They're
before
like,
it even hits the ground, it's
bam.
As it goes off the road, the truck is blowing up.
I will give them this. I admire their gratuitous use of explosions in this film. I admire
maybe
them.
that's
the
pyrotechnics where all the money went.
In this film.
Yeah, you might not admire it as much in a second.
There's a bazooka going off every 5 minutes. Every 5 minutes, they just blow up a truck. All right, you truck, bam.
The director of photography lost an eye.
Yeah.
In the
lawnmower scene.
Really? And there's a scene in the movie where a guy gets gasoline sprayed in his eyes and he almost loses his eyes.
Yeah.
Ironic.
he lost an eye?
Yeah, the director of photography lost an eye.
The radio-controlled lawnmower went crazy and hit like a black or like a wooden support for the camera and like splinters went everywhere and
no kid.
Yeah, he lost an eye. Yeah.
Wow.
Well, that's where the $10 million went then.
Man.
That was actually an $18 million settlement.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah. the lawsuit was more
than that part of the budget of this movie. Yeah.
Man, that is bad. I mean, I could see, I mean, if you lose an eye on like a good movie
this is his last movie.
An eye on Maximum Overdrive.
This is his last movie too, because he lost his eye.
So when a tiger loses his eye, that's it. You're done.
So now this is a $28 million movie then.
Well, basically, yeah. And then we just keep going back to the Dixie Boy truck stop where nothing is happening. Sometimes there's times where I don't
still
even know why
nothing
we're,
happened.
Why are we cutting back to this truck stop? Because nothing's
happening. Well, the
happened.
Trucks.
Emilio Estevez is getting some action.
Have we mentioned this? Yeah, that's true. Have we mentioned that the people are trapped in the diner and the trucks are just driving around in circles? That's it.
Right.
It's about a dozen trucks just literally circling. Now, they're supposed to be like vultures. Now, if they want to destroy the human race,
through the truck stop.
Well, I was going to say,
what's the point of
there?
Keeping them there?
Because Jack's description, people sitting in a truck stop watching trucks circle the truck stop, that sums up about 55 minutes
to keep,
of this movie.
They needed to keep the people there so that they could refill the trucks.
But they're wasting the gasoline by driving
because
around in circles.
Because they're waiting for the other trucks to come.
There's a
and
great...
The, and the car
yeah,
with the
somehow,
gun on
it.
I suppose. But,
somehow
I suppose.
Dixie Boy became like the center for fuel for this.
Yeah, no, I mean, how many other gas stations
yeah, I know.
Are there?
Yeah, right.
There's an amazing bit of dialogue between Emilio Estevez
the East Coast.
And the Emilio Estevez and the girl, like the main love interest. Amazing bit of dialogue because it's established that she has this little like flip out razor that she uses to threaten if anybody
travels. She travels on the road and she doesn't want to get messed up.
When she gets picked up by creepy Bible salesmen.
So here's some coked out Stephen King character development we're about to get.
Stephen King, by the way, is usually great with dialogue, like natural dialogue. So this is. Hilarious.
This is it's not a surprise.
The dialogue in there was unforgivable. Had I not known that Stephen King worked in this film and somebody said, "Oh, by the way, that was written by Stephen King," I literally would have been like, "No. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
No, you are lying to me. Stop." It must be like Stephen King spelled differently. Like he's got the same name, but it's not the same guy, you know?
Yeah. So Emilio Estevez says to the girl, he goes, "If I put my arm around you, are you going to stick me with that?" To which the main love interest is like, you don't stick someone with a straight razor, you slash them with it. and no.
Isn't Emilio Estevez
so stupid.
Yeah. He's an ex-con, too. How does he not know this stuff? He, like, spent time in prison.
He's a petty criminal. He's a petty criminal. He uses boxes.
He used that line in prison all the time.
He uses boxes.
Can I put my arm around you?
To say that, who uses a straight razor?
Except
that
at a very different connotation.
Even by 86, how many people were using straight razors?
And I said earlier on, the most important information, like plot information we're given in this movie is in title cards at the beginning and the end. Not totally true. The most important dialogue conversation in this movie is also broken up by fart sound effects.
I was just gonna say
the
pooping scene. I was just gonna bring that up.
I could practically smell that bathroom.
Vital information about where all these weapons are stored and all of this, and
that's
breaking it up with like bad kids show farting sound effects. It shows how poor. He is tone deaf when it comes to comedy. I know they were trying to be funny in the scene, but it's so not funny.
Well,
it
the irony
hurts.
Of him pooping on the toilet and reading High Society magazine while he was doing it.
Genius.
It was subtle. It was subtle. You had to look past the fart jokes
humor,
to get the actual humor. It was weaved in.
Brilliantly done.
And have we gotten to the point yet where the honeymooning couple?
We're
wants
all over the
to
place.
Get,
I don't
we
know.
Are,
well,
I know. Well,
yeah, they're
it's
there.
Actually
they're
easier
there
to just
point.
Break it up into like people and.
Well, because yeah. before that happens though. The kid's father gets it. Now this scene is just.
Oh yeah.
You don't know he's the kid's father until the end of the movie, though.
Well, you
yes,
kind of
exactly.
do. He's like, I gotta go get my boy. He can't see and all that. But
his
eyes are like. The truck
red,
starts
like,
up.
Gasoline,
the truck
gasoline.
Starts up. He drops his keys. He's gonna drive even though he can't see. And for about 45 seconds, people watch his truck going towards the guy. And nobody says, "Hey, Roy, get out of the way." They wait until it's right on top of him.
John,
they, hey,
John, John. Do you know what this
Whoa, watch out!
Of?
And then
splat.
Then we get this. You know, I love this shot all the time. When the guy looks up and goes, "Ah!" for like 10 yeah. seconds, and gets hit. It's like, well, that's a good 10 seconds. You could jump out of the way, couldn't you?
Exactly. Yeah.
This movie reminded me at one point of The Happening and Jaws 4. It reminded me of Jaws 4 in that. The trucks don't really kill anybody. People basically allow themselves to be hit.
They just walk away.
I mean,
right. well, yeah, because when the Bible salesman gets hit, it looks like he jumps into the truck.
Right, right, yeah. yeah. I mean, these
oh
are,
my God, jump.
These are tractor trailers. They don't move that fast.
Right.
Like,
it takes
them
a while to get going.
You do not turn on a dime in a tractor trailer. right. You can get out of the way of one. Terrible. All right. So the honeymooning couple wants
to get into
Dixie Boy.
Into the truck stop.
Right.
For, it's not, not only is it not clear why, some of the people in the truck stop are like, why do they want to come in?
They said they wanted
they
to
wanna,
call
yeah,
the
Yeah, they
police.
Want to call the police because they're almost running off the road.
Yeah.
they stop us and see trucks going in a circle, don't think anything weird going
yeah, we
on. Or
we got to get in there. We got to contact our insurance company. I really
this
need to
fender bender is going to cost me an arm and a leg if God, we don't get an insurance down here.
My deductible goes up by $500 if I don't contact them immediately.
Where's Dennis Haysbert when we need him?
So they like want to get in there. Honest question, not to make fun of the movie. Was it clear why they wanted to get in there? Did
they
really
wanted to call?
They
said that.
They wanted to call the police.
Yeah, they said, "Oh, there's a gas station up here. We can call the police from there."
You see, this was in an age before cell phones.
Right, so they had to stop.
But even after they see the truck,
but you know what? Even if they had cell phones, they'd probably be rebelling. So they were screwed either way.
That wasn't happening yet.
After they saw the truck circling the truck stop.
No, that wasn't happening yet, though.
Okay.
They came
okay.
earlier in the movie.
No, they were circling.
No, the truck
stopped. Because the guy was like, "I'm going to shoot the gap."
I'm going to shoot the gap,
Even.
So like, I'm saying, they see all this shit going on, and they're like,
"Well, even Lisa.
I still got to get in there."
And
I mean,
Lisa Simpson's like, "No, we don't." Lisa Simpson's like, "No."
Wait, who is
doing?
Lisa Simpson?
The
annoying girl.
The bride.
Yeah.
That's the
voice. Oh, is that the
voice
of?
And at what point does that husband go, "Oh my God, what did I do?"
Yeah.
I mean,
I thought they look like brother and sister, don't they? That couple? Like, they could easily be brother
and
sister.
It was a South. I mean,
yeah.
What were they implying?
Whoa.
I mean, he did say earlier in the film
Whoa.
That he wanted to watch her in the bathroom.
Oh!
Yeah, you lived in North Carolina for a couple years.
Whoa. That's true. So I'm speaking.
We did not mean any offense to anyone who is from the South or knows people from the South.
There's nothing wrong with marrying your sister or brother.
Yeah.
So let's skip back ahead.
There's a natural
connection there. They get into the rest stop.
Yeah.
That was before. Now we're skipping back ahead.
Okay, so
let's skip to my favorite.
Like if Haley, sorry, I just thought
no,
of this. If Haley Joel Osment when Haley Joel Osment is like 35, and if he had red hair, that's what the husband looked like.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
yeah.
We'll say
sorry,
like yeah, older Haley Joel Osment.
Yeah,
with older Haley Joel Osment married
with
Lisa Simpson.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Go ahead.
Let's get to one of my favorite performances in any movie ever.
Are you going to
is the yeah the waitress?
Oh
yes!
No.
So it's nighttime now.
Oh no!
Yes, yes.
It's nighttime now, and everyone's they're drinking. They're just sort of trying to pass time because they figured, you know, they can't do anything else. Yeah. So the waitress just is fed up, and she starts talking about how this isn't fair because we made them, and you know, it kind of ties into the Who Made Who theme song, whatever. But we made them; they can't do this to us. So she loses her mind. She goes outside.
She challenges the trucks.
She just starts yelling at the trucks. We made you.
We made you.
She exercises an underwear every time.
We made you. We made you. We made you. She was channeling William Shatner.
She was like moving like weird.
The body language was funnier.
And here's the worst part.
She's moving like a kabuki actress.
It's weird. This has got to show how high Stephen King was, because that had to be the audition scene. Like, when she auditioned, that had to be the material she was auditioning
and
with.
And she did.
So you don't think it was a scene where she was getting an arm cut by a knife?
Or that's... But so not only was this, like... I mean, that was the material that Stephen King decided to put her in the movie based on, and it's unbelievable.
And then he said, that's perfect. Let's move on.
It was like the Stella scene in the Streetcar Named Desire.
I'm envisioning him, like, do you remember the scene, I think it's in True Romance, where a bag of cocaine explodes on a guy's face, and it, like, looks like he was, like, snowing on him? That's what I envision Stephen King looking like all movies shoot long.
Stephen King just has a sheet of cocaine on his face while he's directing.
And at what point, now, at some point in here, the Bible salesman character who... as Cody was saying, was either died from a truck or jumped into a truck and fell into a ditch. They start hearing this guy
moaning.
And simultaneously, the kid who was trying to escape from the rogue vending machine also comes across this Bible salesman guy.
Because he's moving towards the truck stop.
Because his
father. Because his father works
father,
there. We haven't
father
figured
works
this out
there.
Yet.
So they mount a Great Escape style plan to rescue the Bible salesman
by crawling
guy.
Through sewer.
By crawling through a sewer, which turns into...
Well, it was like Escape from Alcatraz.
Kind of Escape from Alcatraz. Like,
or like Shawshank Redemption.
Or like
Stephen
Shawshank
King-based
Redemption.
Movie.
With,
oh, yeah, it was Shawshank. I was getting them. Yeah, it was Shawshank.
Crawling through the,
crawling through
the sewer.
I cannot, for the life... I would love to hear someone else's interpretation of what Stephen King was going for in this sewer scene. I think they were trying as a comedic scene.
Oh, yeah.
But it's painful.
What was with the dialogue in that?
Yeah. How's it taste?
Emilio Estevez like trips for a second. The guy's like, "You okay?" Emilio Estevez is like, "Yeah." And there's just like 5 seconds more silence in the line.
I'm convinced that Emilio Estevez refused to play it as a comedy because he's like, "This is so stupid. I'm not gonna play this scene as a comedy." But the other actor is playing it as a comedy.
It felt like a scene that would happen in a movie. Like, you know what happens in a movie, but you would never actually show it in a movie.
Yeah.
Like, boy, how about the smell, huh? Yeah, pretty bad.
And then he slips and he splashes something. Yeah. And he goes, hope you didn't get in your mouth.
How's that taste?
Yeah. In the whole
We almost there?
And Emilio Estevez has, like, no reaction to anything going on. You just sense he's being like, God, get this shot over with.
Meanwhile, Stephen King's, like, snorting coke. Like, brilliant, keep going. Yeah.
More jokes.
Stephen, you want to cut the scene? No, keep it going.
And so they rescue... So now the kid is inside the truck stop with them. Right? Okay, yeah. So they bring the kid back.
They bring the kid who's like being held by the Bible. Wait, what was that? By the way, the Bible salesman, what was that blue stuff on his face? When they find him in the ditch,
he's like painted up like
he looked like the Blue Man Group, like
something weird
messed with him
right?
while he was in
something weird.
I'm guessing
he looked like David Cross in Arrested Development.
He did. I'm guessing a paint can became sentient at some point from this.
Flung itself at him. Yeah.
A rogue electric paint roller came and brushed his face.
And then the little kid is like, the little kid comes across him and he goes, "Help me! How can I help you?" And he goes, "Drag me!"
And he's like, "If you don't help me, I'll kill you."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where the kids
and then he
dies.
Like,
and the kids
should
be like, "If you have the strength to kill me, you can move yourself.
Walk.
Thanks.
Why don't you get your ass up and walk, okay?"
So luckily, this kid knows Morse code. And luckily, the trucks
also know Morse code.
And they start honking.
No, when they go back through the sewers and up through the restroom, and the kid's like, to Emilio Estevez, "Is my father dead?"
Oh,
And he just like looks at
him. Let's talk about that later.
Yeah.
I've never been good at this sentimental crap.
Yeah.
And when the kid finally finds out and starts crying, can I just say there's just a very, very awkward hug moment between Emilio Estevez and the kid. Like, it looks kind of like a headlock, but at the same time, it looks like it's kind of perverted and twisted. It's
yeah, that was strange.
This weird hug. Because it's okay. It's okay. It's going to be okay. We're going to get out of this. You know, you'll get past this, you know. The kid just found out his father's dad. He's crying. He's holding him. At first, it looks like he put him in a headlock. But then it looks like something else. And I was like, okay, this is an awkward hug. And
oh, yeah.
It made me feel a little awkward.
Terrible.
That was kind of rough.
So, yeah, the next morning they wake up and I don't know what you would call it, but some kind of motorized gun car thing.
It's army. Yeah.
It looks like a golf cart with a machine gun on it.
It comes rolling up to
I bet the machines fashioned it.
Yeah,
maybe they did.
It comes rolling machines up building to the Dixie Boy with a bulldozer, and the horn starts honking, and the kid has a merit badge in Morse code, luckily, so he figures out it's Morse code and he starts writing it down.
Well, first, like that assault gun just starts shooting.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Like,
it shoots everyone up.
Half the people
in the
diner get killed.
Well, because the girl, I think the waitress goes back out again.
Oh, yeah.
She has a gun. She goes back out and yells again.
Yeah, she goes out with a rocket launcher.
Yeah, and she... I can't remember if she shoots it or not, but...
That was the most satisfying scene in the movie. Like, didn't you just want her to get shot when she was doing that? Who made you? Yeah, it wasn't who made you. That would have been awesome if she had been, who made who?
Yes.
And then AC/DC comes out and they're like, who made who? And then the assault gun goes to them and starts shooting them up.
And there wouldn't be any more music for the movie.
Gotta shoot you!
So yeah, half the Dixie Boy gets shot up, and then the Morse code starts, and the kid decodes it, and it says something along the lines of, someone needs to fuel us up,
someone
will not get killed.
Someone needs to fuel us up, and that someone will not get hurt.
But if you don't fuel us up, you will all die. Which is like, it's sort of a mixed message.
So, yeah. So here comes the exciting gas pumping sequence.
Pumping gas. Wait. I love the joke, though, that Emilio Estevez makes.
Yeah.
Half the diner has just been killed in a massacre. And he's like, hey, hope they brought their American Express cars. And he knows everyone in the diner is like, too soon, Emilio. There's dead bodies on the ground here.
He goes out to pump the gas, and what begins is Hell's Bells starts playing.
But wait, before someone explain this to me. Why do they agree to pump the gas?
So that they
because they're
killed.
Powerless if they just
because the machine gun will gun them down. I think was the concept here.
They were lit, but
like
they
the gun which growls. By the way, the gun cart growls. Yeah. It's standing there.
Yeah, it was
and
like
it's already killed
growl.
Like four of them. So now it's kind of like leveling the gun.
But honestly,
like
they have rocket launchers, assault rifles.
It looks like there's a big
and they're being
forest out in back of them.
And they're on a gas.
All is
so
run
that's
out
it.
The back
that's
door.
It. They've won. You're right. I didn't think about this. They could have blown up the gun cart, and that's it. Ha ha. We're not gonna fill you.
Run out the back
that's
door
their
and
weakness.
Go into the woods.
Just yeah.
Yeah. How does the plan change? So we have this. Okay.
Why not camp out in the sewer
there's
for a while?
There's this long 10-minute sequence of all of the characters. Filling up
gas.
These
and also
trucks
though before
with
that
gas.
Though with Emilio's stuff is he goes outside and talks to the truck, which is funny because you know he's coked up. I mean Stephen King is all coked up.
Probably
somebody
else. I have a feeling there's
some
this
dialogue
things
like,
going on in their trailers.
Like a drug dealer thing. Like I got the best stuff in town. You gotta love this stuff.
I got the best stuff in the East Coast. Yeah. You tell all your friends to come here. Which is like, why is
why
Emilio Estevez telling?
Trucks?
Why does he want all the other trucks to come here to keep fueling them up?
Yeah, why
it becomes like a source of pride for him.
It's this scene makes
he
no
takes
sense.
His job of pumping gas very seriously.
Right, and then I love when he gets so tired. He's all tired out from pumping gas.
Yes. Well, what we go into is we go.
I can't walk. Oh my god! Help me! Help walk me back.
It's like 5 minutes
and
like
eight overtime football.
We go
game.
Into a montage. We go into a montage with Hell's Bells playing of everyone just filling gas up.
Like you swear they just Estevez, walk through the Sahara or something.
Emilio Estevez gets tired, and then he looks at the truck and he says, "That's it, no more." And the truck starts rolling towards him because the gas station runs out of gas, and he starts bumping his chest against the grill as if it were like two two drunk jocks in a bar about to get in a fight over a chick. Like, hey,
keep going.
Hey, hey, what's wrong? We got no more gas. We got no more gas. You got a problem with that? And he's like pumping up against this thing. And I'm like, what does he think? He's going to kick this thing's ass with his fists? Well, finally, he's like, fine, screw you. And another guy comes over and says, come on, Billy. Come on, Billy. You need to rest. You're tired. You're tired. And all of a sudden, he's like, oh, you're right. And he gets all exhausted. But I gotta replace more gas. Somehow that he's got access to
the tanker truck.
Okay. Well, he says, all right, fine. He's going to fill up the gas tanks for the gas station with the gas from the tanker that he was just chest bumping. And then they say, you know what? You should go inside and take a rest. You should go inside and take a rest.
Well, it was just funny how exhausted he was from just standing there pumping gas.
Exactly.
I mean.
And why was he pumping? You know, I said he was pumping gas into the tanker, and then the tanker put gas back into the gas station.
None of this, Nick. This is all lunacy. This whole sequence is lunacy. Which then, an exhausted Emilio Estevez. News spoiler. I am not recommending people watch this movie because it's so. I mean, I think it's so bad it's bad. But there is a monologue Emilio Estevez gives, and I think you all know the one I'm talking about, where this crazy, strung-out Emilio Estevez, whose character is somehow on the verge of passing out, starts talking about aliens moving into Earth because they see it as a dirty new house.
They want Earth, but we, the people, are like the pests in the house that they have to come and sweep away with the trucks. The trucks are the... Or the broom.
The way he delivers it, this is like a broom. This is like what somebody who's been up for like 92 hours, you know, drinking Jolt Cola would be delivering.
Or Pepsi. Pepsi next.
I was watching this just in total awe. And really impressed that Emilio Estevez ever worked again in Hollywood.
And actually, the best years of his career were still to come.
Yeah. And Emilio Estevez.
This is pre-Young Guns, right?
Well, this is pre-Young. Emilio Estevez actually had already directed a movie by this point. Oh my God, he's kind of a multi. I cannot imagine what this must have been like being on this insane set for him, because he's actually a pretty talented director in his own right. If you've seen his films. This must have been complete lunacy. He should write a book about this movie. And by the way, 1 minute later, we see all these scenes with Emilio Estevez like near death, like near passing out. There's like a cutaway.
And then all of a sudden he's like,
he's fine. He's totally
fine. He comes back out, and
the other guy's in his position.
That guy's been pumping gas for 2 hours. He looks like he's about to die. He's like, how are you? He's like, I'm awfully tired.
Yeah.
I had no idea pumping gas was so strenuous.
Pumping gas is very strenuous. Those people that fill your gas tanks need to be appreciated.
I'm going
to
start tipping them.
Yeah.
You really should.
If you ever go to a full service
gas station. The only place I know of around here is that...
If you live in New Jersey...
That gas station on Bridge Street.
Yeah. If you live in New Jersey, it's actually the law. They have to pump gas for you. So the next time you're, say, at a full service station, and I know there aren't many around here, just think about how hard those people work, and how tiring it must be to stand out in the sun all day filling your gas tank. So yeah, I would say slip them a couple bucks for a tip, sure.
Alex is texting.
I am. This was actually the part of the movie as I was watching it where I started like checking my email. Like, I think I went on Twitter at one point.
This is when it doesn't become as much fun. The fun part, the fun stuff's up in the beginning.
Yeah, the fun was over.
Basically,
a while.
I would say...
I still enjoy it, but
funnest,
it's not as fun.
The funnest part of the movie, I would say, would be the first act,
I'm amazed you can break it down into acts. I don't know where three-act structure
I just guessed about when my mood shifted. I said, okay, this must be an act.
I'm angry.
This is kind of funny, I guess, it's boring.
Jack's path from fun to boredom was much like Emilio Estevez pumping gas at first... Yeah, I got the best stuff in town. You tell all your friends about the end. He's just near death, bored.
Yeah, bored.
Talking about brooms and aliens.
So is this where they hatched their brilliant scheme to escape?
During the gas pumping, because he goes back out to pump the gas, and then he had grabbed a grenade from the basement, so he tricks the...
It's actually not a bad plan, I guess.
Blows up the gun cart, and then... I think they stop pumping gas after that. They decide, okay, we're going to... He has this plan where he wants to go to this island where he knows...
It's not a bad plan.
They're going to go to a sailboat. He knows a guy who's got a sailboat. It's a sailboat, so it's not going to... And there's no engine.
That we know
of. It's not going to come to life.
But a sprinkler doesn't have an engine again.
Like, exactly. No, like, right, yeah. The water might come to life. Yeah, you mean, never know.
A sailboat.
Probably there's no watermelons on that.
In the logic of this movie, yeah, the ropes that operate the sailboat could come to life. Apparently,
they go to the island and the coconuts start falling.
Well, that's oh
my
god!
That's
going to be the sequel. The sequel is in the Maximum Overdrive sequel. They're going to be on a boat, and it's going to be all Christopher Cross doing the music, so they can use sailing as the theme song.
Oh, that's awful. That's awful.
Well, and again, the plot to put a grenade on this gun car is pretty good. Why didn't they do it 5 minutes after the gun car showed up?
Why didn't they throw it at you or hit it with that bazooka? Rocket launcher.
They have a basement full. Like they have a basement that could fight a small war, which the people are very little.
It was like a Red Dawn like weapons cache, and they basically never used it.
Or just hole up in the basement and like, cause
one or just go anywhere underground.
Because some character is like, oh, we just have to wait for this comet to go away, and everything will be fine. And
I was so scared.
Why don't we just go down? We've got food. We have guns. Why don't we go down to the basement for 6 days?
I got so scared when she said that, when she was like, all we have to do is survive for the next 6 days. Like, oh my God, if this movie goes on for another 6 days at this pace. Oh my Lord.
Wow.
Day five.
So they decide they're going to make a run for it. They're going to go through the drainage system to go across the street and then make a run for the marina.
Yeah.
So I think they grab a bunch of guns and they make a run for it.
And this is where the pacing gets really bad.
What's the end of
it? This is where the pacing
goes.
It really
into
does.
No, the last 5 minutes of the movie. Yeah.
No, but the ending is kind of like really weird. It's kind of like
weird.
Again, but just to clarify, the ending is really
there's no
weird.
Tension, there's no nothing.
There's no tension in the movie! Yeah.
We're going, well, no,
at what point is there tension in this movie?
There are no stakes in this movie anyway.
But it was like,
in fact, I think the majority of the cast actually survives.
I don't know if tension is the right word, but it's kind of like.
No, it's not the right word.
Tension was definitely not the right word to use.
The word tension should not be used
really
with this movie.
But it really falls apart here because it's kind of like...
You can't fall apart when it's never together.
But it really falls apart here. I mean, it's kind of like... I just kind of like, okay, let's wrap this up, guys. All right, let's wrap this up. Run around with guns.
I'm running out of Coke. Let's
shoot this and shoot that and keep running. Then
they're being chased at the end, right by the time they reach the boat.
Andy liked it better when they were in the rest stop doing nothing.
They're being stalked.
Andy was ready for a full 7 days of a movie.
He's in it to win it. I think that at the end they're being chased by the Green Goblin again, and his eyes are glowing.
But they've been glowing the whole movie.
Emilio Estevez does at the end of the movie what they could have done in minute 10. He shoots a rocket at the Green Goblin,
and then they all cheer, blowing out.
We finally did what we could have done an hour and 45 minutes ago.
That's what I'm saying. It like wraps up. So, like I said, okay, all right, guys. All right, it's been long enough. Let's get this done. Just shoot the thing that takes your order at McDonald's or whatever.
Yeah, the kid has this big revenge moment.
Well, because the fast food thing's
going. They're
over here.
Humor's
over
here.
Humor's over here. But doesn't someone have to talk through that too? That's not like an automated voice or anything.
I was thinking that too.
Like, is there like some? Was that like the main like machine head like talking there? Is that what it sounded like?
What the humans here? Humans here.
And then the kid takes the gun and no. And then like we have like at the end. Is that, you guys have all seen The Shootist, right? The John Wayne movie.
Yes. I have.
There's like a shootist scene at the end where the kid shoots the little fast food talking thing. And he's like, "That's for my dad, you son of a bitch." Yeah. And then he like takes the gun and he's like, "I don't want this anymore." A la Ron Howard when he shoots the guy that shoots John Wayne at the end of The Shootist. And then there's that pivotal moment where is Ron Howard going to become the next great gunfighter?
And he throws the gun down.
Yeah.
He breaks the cycle of
Stephen King.
That was a good reference there. I didn't think about
it
that.
It's just like The Shootist, except we're looking at a fast food menu.
if you take that 1 5-second scene, it's just like The Shootist.
Yeah.
Wow.
So they blow up, they all get on the boat, and the craziest title card in the history of title cards comes up.
This is pretty bad.
Where I don't even...
I hope Stephen King didn't write this title card.
I think the same machine that did the Morse code thing wrote this. Someone give us fuel. Someone will not get hurt.
Like, this title card just basically says, like...
I don't
know how to describe what it says.
It says, 2 days later, a UFO was destroyed by
a Russian quote-unquote satellite.
Yeah,
Russian,
quote-unquote.
Weather satellite or something.
Weather satellite, yeah.
That would just happen to be equipped with a laser.
It says that, It's like the satellite happened to be equipped with a laser. Like,
no, and it says, it says a UFO was destroyed by it.
Where was the UFO?
Yeah, so I thought maybe that had something to do with the comet, but then after that it says the comet passed 5 days later or whatever. So there was a UFO and a comet?
Yeah, yeah.
Who was making the what I want to know is who made the Pepsi machine sentient? Was it the UFO or was it the comet?
Why didn't they mention the UFO at the beginning? Because they made it seem like it was the comet.
I think it was the comet.
It did open with a shot of the Earth.
I don't know what it was.
What was the point of the UFO?
Were the aliens riding the comet?
What is the point of this
whole
movie?
They're using the tail of the comet to, I don't know.
To shield themselves from ground radar or something?
Yeah. Yeah, newsflash, I hate this movie with a passion. I hate this movie so much.
Maximum overdrive, minimum tension.
Oh, zing.
That's a good review. I like that.
That is a good review. Do we want to do... Let's do our So Wrong It's Right game, which we're going to do based on this. This is sort of a question. Okay. Well, simple question. You can answer this in short form. The truck stop in the movie. Movie set... or real truck stop, where the location where we see most of this,
I know
the
answer
Dixie
to this,
boy.
So
you do?
I'm gonna say real truck stop.
I'm pretty sure it's real.
Okay, so Brian, you're going with.
I'm going with real.
All right, Brian's going with real. Jack, what are you going with?
Set.
You're going with set. Okay, and Cody, you're going with
real.
Trick question.
It's a set.
Trick question.
Well, it was one at one time, but then it was
there
a
are
set.
No wrong answers. It started as a set and was made into a real truck stop after
my gosh.
The movie.
What?
Was it made into one? Oh,
yes.
I know that.
How is that? Oh my god, that's phenomenal.
Yeah,
I know
it
was a set, but I didn't know they made. They kept it as a real truck stop.
They ended up making it into a real truck stop afterwards. Yeah, I want to do it. Everybody wins. It was
where
like
is the
week.
Dixie
this
boy?
This movie was so bad. It was like Little Week. Everybody has to win on the so
it's
bad.
It's like one of those
candy
machines.
I wonder if the guns are still in the basement.
If that rocking
people are just shooting rocket launchers off left and right there. Wait, where is the Dixie boy?
It was
North Carolina,
I think. Yeah. All right, and we have some amazing loved it reviews. These are reviews from people who loved this movie on IMDb, and these are fantastic. Some
people
of my
who
favorite
are Pepsi
ones. I actually had to choose between. There were so many good, like crazy reviews for this movie. Ugh. We can't even do them all here. Ugh. I'm gonna do my two favorites. The first one is from David Tether from North Vancouver.
North Vancouver.
North Vancouver, British Columbia, from our Canadian friends.
Mm-hmm.
10 out of 10. And this is the whole review.
I hate to see what his 1 out of 10 is.
Yeah, 10 out of 10. Sometimes we take these reviews like segments. This is his whole review. David Tether's review. True. This movie is stupid. True.
Get that out of the way.
It is dumb. But I found it to be a guilty pleasure and a lot of fun. I don't understand why this movie is so underrated and why it gets all the negativity it gets.
Because it's stupid.
The plot is excellent. I thought the idea of motor vehicles and other types of machinery being possessed was amazing. There are a lot of scenes of people getting killed by vehicles and other kinds of machinery. If you like that kind of stuff,
no, man.
You won't like this movie.
We do love that kind
who
of stuff.
Who doesn't like
we
that
eat this stuff like, for breakfast?
God, who doesn't like seeing dogs be killed by...
I am always saying, why are there not more movies with scenes of people being killed by kinds of machinery? I'm always asking for that.
And he seemed to think there was some sort of possession going on, which would, insinuate some sort of religious
that's true.
Involvement.
Our next,
interesting take
demonic possession.
By our friend from Canada.
By our next review is also 10 out of 10. In a totally unrelated note, when I like to try to keep the punctuation, spelling, and grammar.
Got to be true to the review.
Yeah,
true
totally
to the
unrelated. That is a totally unrelated note to the review I'm about to read.
Mm-hmm.
The next review from Duop Dempsey from the United States. 10 out of 10.
From the United States.
First line. Please note that this review contains a spielner.
Can we start saying that instead of spoiler?
A spoiler alert?
Spoiler alert!
My spleen is about to explode. Spoiler
alert.
Goes on to say, in 1980, the Earth went through the tail of a mysterious comet.
1986.
For 3 days, Earth's machines, trucks, cars, electronics and planes become living things and tried to enslave Earth.
7 days.
A group of people were trapped at the Dixie Boy truck stop in West Virginia and battled their way to freedom. In my opinion, this movie was the most amazing thing I have ever seen. And it should be, because it came from the mind of Stephen King. The AC/DC soundtrack, the crazy trucks, the actors were all perfect. Sure, the movie technically sucked. Half the time, you were looking right at the cameramen and crews through the reflection of a truck bumper. And the effects sucked, and the acting was questionable. But if you are looking for an entertaining, exciting, and suspenseful movie to enjoy, this is your best bet. If you're looking for something to complain about, please go away. Who in their right mind doesn't like trucks, car crashes, and good suspense?
That was quite the spoiler.
It was.
So, in two 10 out of 10 reviews, a lot of backhanded compliments in these reviews.
I've never heard of people reviewing a movie two times, in fact, where they openly admit it sucks.
But give it a 10 out of 10.
I was like, wow, with friends like these, this movie doesn't need enemies. Holy cow. Is there anything we didn't bring up in this movie that we should?
Oh, I have a question. All right. After the sex scene between Emilio Estevez and that woman,
which is super creepy because like a young boy comes in immediately.
And there's a lot. A lot of porn glued.
Now
to the wall.
I was born in 1986, so you know I wasn't really alive for too much from the 80s. But after they have sex, they start.
Wait, are you implying that you Emilio Estevez and the love interest could be your parents?
Wow, what's going on there?
That's actually, I mean, I was born the year that the movie was made.
You were born the year that this sex scene was filmed.
And I am part Mexican.
Yeah. I'm just, you know, yeah.
I may have seen the point of my conception in that movie.
Yeah. Okay, sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll get into that later. Spoiler alert! Yeah. Is it comedy like a cupcake after sex in the 80s? Like, I know, like, usually in movies they smoke cigarettes,
because he's like,
in the 80s,
they're laying there.
Share a cupcake?
They're laying there, and he goes, I have an idea, and then it cuts to them eating a cupcake.
They're like,
was that his idea?
Pillow talk, and they have, like, ice, icing all over their noses, like, share this cupcake.
I'm guessing it was a cocaine cupcake.
I did notice that.
It's really too bad, too, that AC/DC doesn't do more movie scores, because that's what you just need, is, like, random, like,
you really need AC/DC to do those, like, few chords on the guitar.
Yeah.
Well, it's right, I was reading on IMDb that, in the trivia, it was saying, like, AC/DC is in the speedboat going under the bridge in the beginning. I'm like, really? I went back and watched it. It's like the speedboat is like way in the distance. Like,
it's tiny.
How does anyone know that? Or why would you even put them in the
AC/DC
speedboat?
AC/DC's down there like, you sure you're going to be able to see us with that camera? Yeah, we're okay.
Oh my God.
We don't want to be in your movie.
And then there's an AC/DC truck on the bridge.
It's like a tour van or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Stephen King said about this movie that he wanted to direct this one because he was sick of seeing people not do Stephen King correctly, and he wanted. Yeah. He said, "If you want to do it right, you got to do it yourself." So he wanted to see Stephen King done correctly. So he did Maximum Overdrive.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, it should be said his stuff doesn't usually translate very well to the screen.
But you would think you would think that he would be the man to do it, proved himself
wasn't
wrong.
Out, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. Let's go
around.
Do you
think that's a cheap escape, though, that he's blaming drug addiction on the badness of this movie? Because multiple people go into the making of a film, not just its director slash writer.
This was, like, right at his lowest point. They tell stories on the internet that he was drinking Listerine. In addition to being, like, coked out and drinking gallons of beer, he was taking, like, the alcohol, because there's a minimal amount of, like, alcohol even in just Listerine. Like, this was, like,
why would you drink Listerine when you could just drink alcohol?
That's a great question.
Well, if you're going through...
Why would you go to such a conference?
It's a sad truth that people going through...
Was he 16 or something?
I mean, Stephen King, he, like, has money. It's not like he has to resort to Listerine.
People who go through rehab sometimes will do that if there's, like, no alcohol in the house. He's got someone watching him. It's kind of sad, but it does happen.
So he's able to, like, do coke all the time, but when it came to alcohol, gotta get the Listerine to get it by people.
I guess.
Yeah, but real low point. I don't know. It doesn't get worse than this. Well, let's go around and say if we think it's so bad it's good. I will just jump right in and say this is one of the worst films I've ever seen in my life. If you really are into like so bad it's good films, maybe it's worth seeing because it is so crazy. And just for Emilio Estevez's insane aliens monologue. And if you want to know what the world of someone coked out of their mind looks like, but be warned if you, even if you're a fan of bad movies, somebody else's thought. That kind of sums it up.
I don't have any more Spielers to talk about.
I'm Spielered out.
It wasn't fun. It wasn't fun to watch. That's basically it. I had no fun watching this one.
By the way, I feel like
if Andy wrote a review, his would be much like the ones we read.
It would be a lot like that, right?
this movie sucks. It's fun.
It's fun. I laughed. I had a good time with it.
Yes, I've seen this movie five or six times.
Don't know why you laughed.
And I do enjoy this movie. I think it's so bad it's good.
It's so good it's good. That's what I would say.
It is not. So,
just
oh
based on
God.
The AC/DC soundtrack
say,
alone.
I love the AC/DC. I love the rock soundtrack.
Just because it doesn't fit at all. It's hilarious.
And
yeah, I think the soundtrack is much better than the actual
movie. I would definitely listen to the soundtrack of this movie.
And they like I said before, the first half of it is the fun part. You get to the second half, it's like, eh.
I'll continue watching it. I think I have the soundtrack to this movie on vinyl, actually.
Ooh.
You do?
Wow, yeah. That's pretty cool. Wow.
Okay. I do, too. I got it also.
Yeah.
Wow. Does it have the cha-cha-cha-cha?
It's like a five-second track.
that would be amazing if AC/DC just released the score. Like, not the songs, just their score. That'd be incredible. It'd be like a 45-second long score. Just riffs. It'd be like 20 tracks of like five-second riffs.
You look at the runtime: 6 seconds, 8 seconds, 7 seconds.
Wow. I think that, boy, that wraps up this episode, wraps up Maximum Overdrive.
Wow.
The controversy will continue. As we always say, please like our Facebook page, Stop the Movie I Want to Get Out on Facebook. You can follow me on Twitter, @ Wind Up Films.
At
Jack Estabrook, live tweeting every one of these films. I was watching the live tweet of Maximum Overdrive late last night when I woke up. Yeah. And if you get a chance, do us a huge favor. If you like the show, if you give us a positive review on iTunes, those are a big help to us. Really
just
help
no Spielers, please.
Yes, no Spielers.
No Spielers.
Spieler free. We try to keep it Spieler free. But if you can give us a positive review on iTunes, huge help to us. Huge help to us expanding the show. And I think that is it. Any final thoughts? Anyone want to do a quick guitar riff to bring us out?
We made you!
That sounds like the Wayne's World.
Oh, it kind of does sound like Wayne's World.
That's basically what it was.
Good times. All right, we will be back. We should have some very special guests in our next few episodes and be back soon with those. We will follow us on Facebook and Twitter to hear more about upcoming episodes as they come in. All right. Have a good week. We'll see you next time.
Toodles.